Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is wonderful to have you here for another episode of the show. Now, for the practice owners listening to this episode, we're going to be talking about team and specifically how to build and lead a wonderful team in your practice. No one teaches you how to do this at university. You find your way into practice ownership and most of us just have to muddle along. And really, we also understand that building and leading a team is one of those things that gives us more headaches than perhaps any other element of business. But if we get this right, then we are going to have a team that's aligned and focused and driven and helping us all move forward together towards our collective goals and vision for the business. Now, my guest today is someone who's been on her own journey around practice ownership, someone who's dedicated herself to learning as much as she can about the human condition and how that relates to teamwork, specifically within a dental practice. Becky Chen runs a dental practice in Victoria. It's a very successful practice, and she runs a Facebook group called Dentomology, which is really geared towards understanding the human resource element of running a dental practice. And my conversation with her today is a really rich vein because we touch on a lot of things. We talk about the raw materials needed for team members to step into the practice. We talk about leadership and how we can all step up our own leadership. And she shares very openly the things that she's done well in her practice, but she also shares the things that she's not done so well and where she's had to make adjustments and corrections along the way. There's a lot of really good information, some real pearls of wisdom in this episode. And as always, I'm going to encourage you to have a pen and paper handy because you're going to want to take away some of the lessons from this show and apply them in your own practice. But for now, let's enjoy our conversation with Becky Chen. I hope you enjoy this as much as I enjoyed talking to her. Becky Chen, thank you so much for taking time to come and join us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. We have fought weather, we have fought storms, but we have made it today. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Jesse, for having me. It's an absolute honor.
Oh, look, Becky, I've known you now for quite a number of years, and it's been really interesting to watch your journey. You've grown your practice. You've done really well with it. I've seen you speak at conferences. And of course, now you've got the Dentomology Facebook group. And clearly, you've got a real fascination and an interest in teams and structure of teams and how they operate and how to get the best out of them. I'm curious, what was it that piqued your fascination around that? What was it that got you thinking about that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I think usually, for myself and maybe for others too, a lot of the things that sort of make us more interested in a particular area is when we realize how bad we actually are in it. And so for me, it was one of those things. And look, relationships and, you know, people relationships and things like that has always been a big interest of mine. I remember in high school, even, you know, things like studying psychology and all that sort of stuff was really, really interesting for me. And so when I, you know, started my own practice, I sort of naturally thought that the assumption was that I would be a good leader. And then when I realized that there were days where it probably didn't look that way, I sort of went soul searching, and then I sort of had to try and figure out what I did wrong and what I need to do to fix things up. And yeah, and then I had to reframe that story, and I told myself, you know what, this is the best opportunity. I do enjoy HR, yes, not all aspects of it, but, you know, for the majority of it, things like, you know, the human resource side and how to optimize teams and utilize every team member, how to grow them, how to grow myself and grow them and grow the business together. That then became the focus of my practice.
So that sounds really interesting. That's how I got interested in endo, by the way, because I was really bad at it. But it's interesting, we find something that we're not so good at, or we feel less than confident in, and we kind of dive into that to build the skills. So I'm curious to ask you, before we get into, you know, how well things are going now, and I know things are going well, what did you discover about yourself when you did that soul searching? And I guess, you know, because no one teaches you how to be a good leader at university, no one prepares you for practice ownership. What were the things you think, wow, I think every single person needs to know this?
That's a good question. And I think that's a broad one. I think for me, the pivot point really was starting to understand more about myself. And that would definitely be something that I recommend every owner to do. One thing I knew about myself was I am very drawn to people just in general. And there are days where people will tell me I'm probably a little bit too politically correct. but I am just really drawn to people just in general. And so when I knew that things weren't working, I sort of then said, okay, well, how do I fix that? So I did already have some sort of interest in people to begin with. I think it might be something that's a little bit hard if I think HR is something where some people just have zero interest, and that's completely fine. Delegate that to someone who does have interest in that. But I do think that, you know, I really did feel like that that's something that I wanted to do well in, because I thought going into leadership, dental practice ownership and things, that that was going to be the area that I was good at, but then I wasn't. So I think for me, well, I don't think I was terrible, but I definitely wasn't at the level that I wanted things to be.
I'm curious to understand, just to dig a little deeper there, Becky, is when you went on that soul searching journey and you did the inventory of what you did well and perhaps where there's some room to improve and grow, what did you discover about yourself?
That I was probably a bit of a people pleaser.
So
I had to actually, I had to really, you know, scale that back and be like, you know what, it's okay. Not everybody needs to love you. And that's just how it is. You know, like sometimes you just can't please everybody. But I think for me, I'll tell you a little bit about my story and how I sort of fell into this space as well. So as you know, I actually am a little bit of a CPD junkie when it comes to business side of things and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I just loved learning. And I think that comes from the fact that both my parents were teachers in Taiwan, which is where I was born. Mm-hmm. And I left when I was seven. My mum was an English teacher at a junior high school, and my dad was a teacher for chemistry and physics. And in Taiwan, what's really interesting is that they stream all their classes. So they kind of like, they're like, these people are like the top students. They're one class, and you've got the second, you know, like the B grade types of people see. And my parents, they happen to be excellent teachers. So they always taught the top students, and their students always performed the best within the school. And that was just how it was. They also had their own, they ran their own tuition school, which was like a massive thing in Asia.
Yep.
It still is, I think. And I don't know how the kids don't sleep. They just, after school, they go to lesson. It finishes at 10, they go home.
Yeah.
You know, 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, wow.
And so that's, and so my parents had one of those tuition schools. My mum had to sort of, just to give you an idea of how successful they were, and I'm not saying this to gloat or anything, but it's just my mum had to give lessons with a microphone because the class was that big.
Oh, wow.
Every time when the classes was dismissed, the entire street would just be congested with bicycles and, you know, motorbikes, and it was just massive.
Wow.
So for me, growing up, my biggest role models definitely were my parents. And for them, things like, you know, teaching, supporting, all that sort of stuff was very much a part of our lives. I remember being very much a part of extracurricular activities. I just loved it. My older brother was the academic one, and I was more into all the extracurricular activities. And one of the things that I did as a child in primary school was public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so my parents would, you know, spend hours with me rehearsing things and, you know, looking at the hand gestures and where things had to go, the intonation and all that sort of stuff. And so that was something that I grew up with. So naturally, coming into a dental practice sort of space, I just thought that if I trained my team well and I gave them everything that they needed and I supported them, that this thing would just fly. But of course, it didn't happen that way. So one of my pivotal moments was when I decided to engage in a business coaching program, and took the whole team there, went around all the rooms, and, you know, the trainer went around the rooms, everyone introduced their teams, and you can see all the teams there. Then a few months later, you go back. We went back for the second round of, mm-hmm. you know, the next part of the program. And I remember at that time, I had already lost two or three of my own team members in that short time frame, all sort of very quickly, all at once. And then I then sort of saw, you know, at another table, a practice owner who had come with a 100% staff turnover. So they kept all their clinicians, 100% overhaul of the entire team. And it wasn't a small team.
No.
And that wasn't just a unique thing. It was, you know, you can see that across the board. So I was thinking, there's something is not right here. And not saying that it's anybody's particular fault, but I just knew that whatever was happening was not happening because we were unable to bring the team along on this journey with us, even though we thought that we were all doing the right things and giving them the training, information, education that they need. So, you know, I had to go back to the drawing board, and this is what I mean by, you know, I had to go soul searching. Mm. And when you look at, say, in Asia, like in Taiwan, they literally streamed those students. So it's like the ones that really wanted to learn, shared the same visions as the teachers, wanted to get the A grades, they were the ones that came along with the top teachers who can actually get them there. And then you've got the B grades and the C grades and all that sort of stuff. And of course, every student or every parent, I should say, in Asia, every parent wished that their kids were classed in the A grade group because that's going to get them further. And that's just what people sort of aspired towards because education is such a big thing there. And so what I then realized was not everybody is necessarily going to have a fit in our team. Mm. And also, so just because you have a training doesn't mean that you could just send everybody on this training and just think that they're all going to do great.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other part of it is if we do have great team members that come on board, how do we make sure we lift them so that they can come on this journey with us together? And that's another big thing too. So that's very much a leadership type of thing, because I'm sure we've all had in our lives people, team members who were fantastic, and in some ways we almost failed them. And I know I've definitely had that where I feel like that person actually wasn't a bad team member, but it just didn't work out for whatever reason in my practice at that given time. And it could be the environment. There could be other situations going on, but it could also be our own leadership as well.
It's really interesting, Becky, because we talk about a thing called the performance culture matrix. And, you know, if you draw a 2x2 grid, much like a dental quadrant, culture fit being on the right-hand side and performance being on the upper half. And I think what I'm hearing you say is you've had some people who were a great culture fit, but you weren't able to elevate their performance at some particular moment in time. And and then you had some great people, a great culture fit, but maybe because of the environment, they didn't stick around and lost some good people. And I think we've all, two hands in the air, Jesse, for that one, because, yeah, we've done that. I've done that too. And I think what I'm understanding or what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I've got this right, is getting that fit right is kind of first base. You've got to make sure that we're working with people who share the vision, want to come on that journey. And then the training itself becomes an easier prospect because they're actually engaged, interested, motivated. They want to be in the A class and they're inherently driven. Is that essentially what you're saying?
Absolutely.
So can I share a hypothesis with you?
Yeah.
Tell me if you think this is rubbish, because you might go, Jesse, that's a load of crap. But here's my thinking. I'm of the view that for us to succeed in business, whether it's dental practice or otherwise, we've got to become really adept at taking people and helping them become really good at what they do. And that means that we need to be able to identify the right people that you've just so eloquently spoken about, but we've got to have a system in place for very deliberately, intentionally, methodically training, developing, and so on. So it's almost like we build this training function into the business, not something that we can just kind of throw someone in the deep end and go, off you go, figure it out. We've got to be more deliberate than that. And so the mentality that sits with that is we've got to become a training organization as much as a dental practice.
Absolutely.
And I wondered if you thought about that in that way at all. And do you think I'm speaking out of my backside or do you agree with that?
No, I completely agree. I completely agree. I'm constantly... and my team can vouch for this. I'm constantly creating new materials to do training on and things like that. That's just something that I do. And, you know, I see that as being part of the job. That's, as an owner, that's what it is.
Why do you think, and again, I don't want to throw people under the bus here because I've made every mistake known to man and probably some unknown to man, but why do you think this doesn't come naturally for some practice owners? Is it a lack of being taught? Is it because they're too busy doing dentistry to look up from the patient to see the team? Where is this coming unstuck?
Oh, look, I think being a dental practice owner, especially if you, the most common pathway is you're a dentist and you become a dental practice owner.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people go into that thinking that, I'm going to be able to have full autonomy and, you know, all that sort of stuff and the financial rewards that come with it. But I think people just don't I think it's actually very rare for people to actually go into practice ownership being like, I'm so excited about becoming a dental practice owner where I can teach my whole team to get to the next level.
Mm.
So I think that's where the expectation needs to be changed, where it's sort of like, well, if you're going to become a practice owner and you're going to commit to that, you need to have the patience to actually teach and train your team members on a regular basis. And then you have to be able to measure what you've taught, whether or not that's actually working. And then you need to come back to the table and revise what you're doing and tweak things if you need to. And all that sort of stuff. It's just the continuum. It doesn't stop.
And so let me ask you, and this is perhaps a loaded question. This is a question, this is perhaps a cheeky question. But one of the things we get faced with, obviously we run a coaching business and we train people, we do all that sort of stuff. But one of the things that I hear all the time is, so Jesse, will you come into the practice and train our team for us?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I'm sure you've heard variations of that as well. And now I have a strong view on that. And my view is that if we were to do that, we'd be robbing the practice owner of the opportunity to learn that skill set, to build those resources and develop that functionality into their own business.
Yep.
But I understand the desire. I totally get why they ask for it. Not being unkind, I totally get it. It's just easy, convenient, kind of pay someone some money to level up the team.
Mm.
Where's your balance, or what's your thought around how much responsibility the business owner takes for that themselves and how much responsibility they can outsource?
Yeah. That is a loaded question.
Sorry, I know.
Yeah. I don't know if I have the right answers for that.
Welcome to the deep end. Sorry, Becky.
I don't know if I have the answer for that, to be honest. Like, I don't think there's a real set formula. I think in the past, when I first started my ownership journey, I probably sent people out on training a lot more. I'm like, let's go training and then come back. And then, we'd implement things together. But even then, there will always be things that fell through the cracks. Mm. I always just felt like, they can inspire that person and make things happen. And I think to a certain extent, that is true. But then at the same time, now that, and probably because of COVID too, it's hard to send your team out for training and things like that. But, I'm starting to do a lot more of that, just creating a lot more of that myself. And I'd say probably the ratios have turned, and now it's probably easily 70 to 80% of the training is in-house, and then the 20% is just to, let's look at the extra information at higher levels, and then we need to still come back and do further training, practicing, implementing, all that sort of stuff. Is you still have to come back and do that in your own practice.
And what about performance management, or particularly scorecards, KPIs, metrics, accountability? What's your thoughts around that? Because I know if you jump into some of the Facebook groups, there's some fairly contentious debates around that. I'm a believer in scorecards, and I'm a believer that, well, my experience is that the people I've worked with that are really those A players, the top tier people, they tend to like measurement.
Yes.
Because they're goal seekers, goal achievers. Do you have any thoughts around scorecards, etc., for team members? Do you use them? Do you not use them?
Yeah. So yeah, we use scorecards. I think I've actually seen your scorecards. Ours is a little bit different, but they're still serving the same sort of purposes. And I think it's so important to measure things, especially for example, if we have a new team member come in, that scorecard is so pivotal, because that's going to allow us to see if that person is actually improving over time or not. And we can see where the trouble areas are. KPIs, I'm all for it. I think it's important to have KPIs. One of the things which I've been confused myself in the past is, mixing up KPIs versus quota. So they're kind of slightly different things. And I think KPIs allow you to meet the quota.
Yep.
But I think KPIs, and look, some practices might have quotas and they'll be like, you need to bill X amount in this given time, or, that sort of stuff. And that's fine. Some practices have that. And they may enforce that very harshly, or they may enforce it very loosely. And then you've got, of course, KPIs. And KPIs is just a measurement to see if all the different elements are coming together correctly. So for example, our practice, the number one KPI we track is rebooking rate. And that's something that I think you taught me that actually, Jesse. But yeah, it's something that, it's really important to keep tracking the rebooking rate. Because that is important. And we actually have that on our whiteboard at the back in our staff room. Everyone can see what every single clinician is, how they're going in terms of their rebooking rate.
I don't know if I taught you that or not, but it's a metric near and dear to my heart, that's for sure. And I'm on the record for saying if I could only have one metric in my practice, that would be it, because it's such a leading indicator for so many other things.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I think we're singing from the same hymn sheet there. So Becky, what I wanted to ask you about is where you see the future of teamwork. This is, again, a big question. It's set against the backdrop of COVID. It's set against the backdrop of, from some people's perspective, may or may not be as relevant for dental practice, but the whole concept of, there's a phrase being thrown around at the moment, that, you know, the great resignation, where people are suddenly deciding what they want to do with their life. Have I put my ladder up the right tree? There's a bit of change in the marketplace. There's also the flexible working arrangements that are really popular. There's the remote off-site working. What do you see as the future of teamwork? And again, I know we'll probably start broad and then bring it back to dentistry, but
yeah,
what's your thinking?
I don't think it changes very much, to be honest, Jesse. I think, you know, at a fundamental level, humans are always going to be the same, and people that love teamwork will always love teamwork. People that don't collaborate well, then they just don't.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they don't have interest. I think one thing that I am definitely seeing as definitely a change is that we all need to learn how to potentially manufacture our own team members better. That's probably something that I think all practice owners need to get on top of. And I'm not trying to promote this or anything like that, but, you know, you might know that, you know, I've launched like a pilot program to train dental assistants trainees in 6 weeks. So it's called the DA in 6 weeks is what the program is called. And so I'm just showing practice owners, you know, what sort of things you can do to sort of get someone from zero knowledge to being able to work independently within that 6 week period. And I think that's a really, I wasn't even like, it wasn't something that I've been like, oh, this is my burning heart's desire. I've always wanted to wheel this out. But when I saw what was happening within sort of within our industry, where people are literally struggling to hire qualified dental assistants, I was like, you know what, we just have to generate our own. And there are truckloads of options out there if we're willing to look outside that industry and bring those people into our industry. So rather than, I heard this term not so long ago, someone said it's a turnkey employee is what a lot of people want. They want someone to come in and they can just, you just plop them right there and then they can fit right into your practice. And I think gone are those days, unless you are willing to pay exorbitant amounts for it. And even then, you're still not going to get what you want.
I agree. I think that speaks to, you know, that function we spoke about earlier is, you know, we've got to be able to bring people up to speed within our own, with our own resources. I actually see that as a fundamental responsibility of a business owner. And I think you touched on that a bit earlier as well, is that that's kind of our role, is to be in the talent development business. Yes, it sounds like a wonderful program. Actually, if people want to check that out, where should they go?
Well, I've only just done the pilot program, but I do have a few people that have just sort of private messaged me and said, can I be on the wait list?
Okay. So find you on Facebook?
Find me on Facebook.
Yeah. All right. Cool, cool. Yeah. So, Becky, I agree. I think humans are humans. And I think that people will either be really collaborative, as you say, or not. And that's just human nature, the human condition. What I'd really like to ask you about is just to shift gear around the role of leaders in the business. Where do you see leadership sitting in practice ownership? I know this is a broad question. I know it's probably Captain Obvious. Yeah, of course, we've got a leader team. Yeah, right. We all understand that. But what are the main challenges that you think dentists face when it comes to leading their team? What are the main challenges that dentists are not well equipped with generally?
I think time. Time is a massive one. I can sit here and say, you know, I'm constantly creating programs and training programs and all that sort of stuff. We're measuring and all that. But the reality is I work 20 clinical hours a week. So the rest of the time, I have lots of time to work on the business, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And I think as dentists, we often try to wear way too many hats. We're the clinician. We're also the, for some people, they could even be the inventory manager as well as, and there are things which really should just be delegated. We need to all find strategies to be able to rise ourselves, to lift ourselves to the next level so that we can, a higher level, so that we can look at our business from an eagle bird's eye view.
Yep. I think, look, Becky, I 100% agree with you. One of the things, just speaking about time, because there's this constant tension, isn't there? And I think growing a practice, there's stages of growth, there's stages of development. And it's like watching, you know, your kids grow up, you see your business grow up over time, you see it change and evolve and mature.
Mm.
And one of the things that I've noticed is that sometimes the practice owners who are still very hands-on clinically, you know, maybe 30, 35 hours a week clinical or something in that ballpark, there's a real tendency to resist giving up some clinical time because they see it as lost revenue. They see it as lost income. They see it as, you know, I'm going to have to pay another associate dentist 35 or 40% or whatever the number is to take on that. And so my profitability is going to take a hit. But equally, if you don't make that shift, if you don't make that change, you're going to be forever stuck doing 35 hours or 40 hours a week of clinical time. So how did you make that first shift? I'm sure you didn't go to 20 hours straight away. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. But what was that first winding back of your clinical commitment from your end? What did that look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. When we started, so as you may know, the practice was a greenfield project.
Mm-hmm.
So I started off with just myself, and we did, I think it was like around 4 days a week. And then I took on a full-time new grad about 6 months later. Then after that, we were both the practice just got so busy. I was seriously working so much. I remember it got to the point where I think one day I pretty much like lost my voice. So I couldn't talk anymore. And I'm a bit of a chatterbox. So I was like, this is bad. You know, and I kept saying, like, I felt so burnt out. And so as soon as the opportunity hit the following year, so 12 months later after that, so about 18 months into the ownership, we then took on two full-time dentists. And so two more full-time dentists, and I just completely scaled back to doing 2 days a week. So that's how I did it. And the way I did that was I was very set from the get-go not to have patients become super attached to me as a brand. I really wanted them to be attached to the clinic as a brand. So new patients would come in and they would straight away be channeled to the associates from day one. Mm. So some of the patients that my associates have been seeing, I'd never sort of met, never seen. And so I think that's the easiest way to channel them. And then of course, when I went on my maternity leave, that was easy because there's no excuse there. And I just sort of said, Dr. So-and-so has a special interest in this. You'd be perfect to go and have that monitored with them. And if you like them, please stay with them, all that sort of stuff. I'll still be around, but, you know, I'll just come back part-time. And so a lot of patients were really good about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I bought myself time.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. One of the things I'm hearing in that is I know your practice went through a period of rapid growth. Clearly, there was a lot of patient flow. There was a strong demand for services there. What about for those practices that may not be in a location such as yours where there's been that really rapid acceleration? Do you have any thoughts about how you might do that in a slower moving environment?
Yeah.
It's a bit tricky. I know there's no good clean answer, but I'm just curious if you have any thoughts.
I still think that, you know, a lot of that is still going to be having the ability to let go.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't do anyone any service to be holding on to all the new patients.
Yeah.
And, you know, you really still need to let go. And then what you would do instead, and look, it's not all beautiful and everything. Like I remember when we first took on the first full-time associate at the time, the books were a little bit choppier. They were, but because she was a new grad, so she would probably take that little bit longer to, you know, a little bit more time like you would for any new grad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just scale back a little bit. So I'd still be at the clinic. If my books were full, I'd see the patients. But if there happened to be a gap, we always prioritized the associates' books before mine, because I knew that if I had a gap in my books, that was my time to go and do some admin work or, you know, check out something or all that sort of stuff. So I still think that you need to do that at some point. You just have to bite the bullet and do it. It doesn't matter how, you know. And then if you're working on the business, that's going to help your business actually accelerate in growth as well. So I think that's another thing. By taking your time away from being heads down, bottoms up, you can now actually have a better perspective of the practice and the business and how it's going, and have a look at what else you need to do to actually grow it quicker.
100%. you can earn whatever you can earn clinically, a couple hundred dollars an hour, whatever it is, you know, 500, 600, I don't know, whatever the hourly rate is, right? But the time you spend working on the business is thousands of dollars an hour in terms of impact and things to progress the business forward. And you touched on something really interesting, Becky, and I really also believe that the ability to scale is directly correlated to your ability to let go of control. And for dentists, that can be a challenge because most of us tend to like to be in control.
Very much so.
Yeah. So that's an emotional and psychological challenge as much as it is intellectual or physical challenge. I mean, we all get the idea of giving up control. That's pretty straightforward. But managing the emotional journey when things don't go right, the tendency or the resisting the urge to jump back in and to fix things yourself, how did you overcome that emotional challenge? Because I'm sure you've experienced, like I've experienced it in others as well. But what's your take on that?
Well, firstly, I don't think I ever did it perfectly. No one really does.
Does anyone? Yeah. Like, no. Seriously, I mean...
No.
If you had done it perfectly, Becky, I would have been feeling really ripped off because of all the mistakes I made.
Oh, gosh. But I think, you know, I think for me, you know, sometimes there were times where, you know, you let go and then you realize, oh, you know, that didn't go the way I wanted it to, which is not great. So, yeah, I look, to be perfectly honest, I do believe I let go. I did. So when and I probably went to the other extremity. So when I had someone come on board, instead of me looking over their shoulder all the time and being like, you know, what are you doing now with this patient? How did you treatment plan that patient? I sort of allowed that person to come to me instead. So we sort of did it that way. And then, of course, you do get, no pun intended, some teething issues. I think it is really just a learning curve for everybody. And at the end of the day, no one was hurt and it wasn't the end of the world. My business is still here. That's probably how I look at it. And I do think that to a certain degree, now in hindsight, I probably should have been monitoring things a little bit more, because if I did, you know, you'd probably have less things, not that there were lots of things going wrong, but, you know, there would have been things that you could have intercepted at times. Mm. But it was a learning curve for myself as well. I wasn't the leader back then that I am now. So, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I think that's really valuable because it gives people an appreciation that the Becky we see now is an evolution. Becky didn't come out of the womb in this current format. Becky's grown like the rest of us. And I think everyone listening to this podcast will be on their own growth journey as well. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate you saying that, because it's easy to look at where you are now and go, oh, wow, she's got it all together, or she's so good at this or so good at that. And as good as you are at those things, it's also been your own journey that's helped you get to that point, and stopping and reflecting and thinking and learning and maybe stubbing a toe along the way and going, oh, okay, well, I won't do that again and I'll do this instead. And it's that iterative process. So, again, I think that's really, really valuable for anyone listening. Becky, we have covered a lot of territory. I've got a couple of podcast listeners that tell me I have common phrases that I use, and you don't even know you're using them half the time. There's these little verbal patterns that apparently have. And I usually like to say we've been uphill and down dale, and we have traversed a lot of territory though. What I wanted to ask you is, if there was three golden rules to team as we finish up our podcast today, if there are three golden rules or three maxims of Becky Chen, what would be a couple of things that you would leave the audience with, just so they can think about, reflect upon as they develop their own teams and develop their own leadership?
Oh, can I be really cliche?
Go for it. Cliches are cliches for a reason. It's because they're good, right? So you can be cliche.
Yeah. I think the first one is to hire well and to really know how to identify good hires. That's probably number one for me. And then the second one is to make sure you set the right expectations and onboard them properly with all of the right expectations from day one. And then, of course, it's an ongoing relationship. So I think that's really important. At the end of the day, no one is perfect. As a leader, we're not perfect. As team members, they're not perfect. And we are all on a journey together, learning together. So I think always coming back to remember that is really important. That's probably a big part of my journey that I had to sort of understand, because at one point, one thing I discovered was I was someone who really likes change. not necessarily love it, but I embrace it really well. And I think part of that is a little bit to do with upbringing and the environment. Once again, the environment that you sort of had, you know, having moved from, you know, Taiwan to New Zealand to Australia, having changed primary schools like 8 times, you know, all that sort of stuff, those sort of things, they do shape you to a certain degree. And so I do deal with change very well. And one thing that I had discovered was that not everybody is like that. And so that actually freaks people out. So when you're implementing changes in your practice, you need to cater to everybody. So we all have to communicate in not your own style. You can't expect everybody to be like, you know, you can't be like, well, I'm the leader, so you all have to listen to me and I'm just going to communicate the way I know best. You actually have to go down to their level, or go to their level, not necessarily down, but go to their level and actually communicate at their level and in the style that they prefer as well. So those are the things that I think, you know, to always remember that it is a relationship at the end of the day. And relationship means there's going to be give and take, and there will be times where it's not perfect, but it doesn't mean it's end of the world. It doesn't mean you have to cut ties. It's just a matter of working towards, you know, if you come into the business, if you've hired someone correctly from the beginning, and we all are at the same understanding that these are our visions and goals, and we're all working towards the same goals and visions, then ultimately you can only assume that everyone's coming from the best intentions at heart to try and get to where you need it to go to.
Yeah, people are there voluntarily. They're not conscripted. And I think that's probably a good thing to remember too. Becky, thank you so much for joining us today. As I alluded to in the introduction, this is a rich vein, and there's a lot of things that we can talk about over and over and over again and again in so many layers of depth around this, because team is one of those things that there's always something to learn. There's always something to get better at. There's always something to master. And whether it's mastering ourselves, mastering how we interrelate with others is again, I think, really key. So the human dynamic is all part of it. So I just want to say thank you so much for coming onto the show today. Thank you so much for putting the Dentomology Facebook group together. Now, listeners who are practice owners who want to go and check that out, please go and search Dentomology in the Facebook search engine there, and you'll find it. And I'm sure, yeah, that'll be a good resource for you there, because I know there's lots of good stuff there as well. So Becky, thank you once again. You're a good egg, and I hope we can do this again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. The honour is absolutely all mine. Thank you so much for having me. It's great.
It's my pleasure. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.